All right, welcome everyone. This is Ken Ainge with the Focusing on Solutions program from PositiveDiscipline.com. She's the author of Positive Discipline and founder of PositiveDiscipline.com. And I had an opportunity to sit down with her and ask her how she got started and how the Positive Discipline series of books came to be. So without further delay, here is Dr. Jane Nelson.
I always wanted to be a good mother and I didn't know how, so I would be too strict until I couldn't stand myself, and then I'd be too permissive till I couldn't stand my kids. And so I just kept going back and forth till we were all sort of schizophrenic. And then finally I went into a class where I was taking child development and family relations at Brigham Young University. And they said, we're not going to teach you a bunch of theories, but one theory on how to help children be have self-discipline, responsibility, cooperation, problem-solving skills. And so I thought, oh, that'd be great. And I was a yes, but what if learner, because it's a real paradigm shift to switch from no punishment. Most people think if you're not going to use punishment, that means you're going to be permissive. But to find that in between where you can be both kind and firm at the same time takes practice and a change in thinking. And so anyway, I would, even though I would say, well, I wouldn't think that would work, I would try it, and usually it would work. And it just was so effective in helping me do better with my children that I just wanted to share it with other people. So I started little parenting groups and little study groups where we just learned together. And then when I went on to get my master's degree, I got a degree in counseling and guidance, and then I was working at Elk Grove School District, and there was a Title IV-C project to work with parents and teachers in the Adlerian model. And after 3 years, we did so well, our statistics were so great at the 0.001 level for positive change in children, that we got 3 more years for disseminating. We got federal funds for disseminating the project throughout the state of California. And so I had to develop a 2-day workshop, and which I did. And we were using a book that went out of print. And so I just sat down and wrote Positive Discipline. That I had no idea it would do as well as it did. I self-published it and published 2,000 copies, and knew I would be seeing about 500 people in lectures that year. But I thought I would be sitting on the other 1,500 books for the rest of my life. But in a year, they were all gone, because I guess the 500 people who came to the workshops told other people, and I had put a little order blank in the back of the book, and lo and behold, in 1 year, they were gone. So then I printed 5,000 copies, and those were gone the next year. And then Stephen Glenn started using it as the text for his Developing Capable People course and started taking it all over and the country. And we sold 80,000 copies when Ballantyne came to me and wanted to publish the book. And so now it's sold almost 1 million copies. Most people think, or used to think, I think things are changing now, but they used to think, oh, I'm going to learn how to punish my kids in positive ways. And discipline really doesn't have anything to do with punishment. That's not the original definition. It comes from a disciple, disciplini or discipulus, which means a follower of truth, of principle, or a venerated leader, or to teach. So I didn't mind. I'd get them in the back door and then teach them how to use discipline that was not punitive and not permissive. So it's been a nice title. What's nice is that if people say, gee, I have children birthed to 3 years old, I say, oh, great, there's a book for that, Positive Discipline, the first 3 years. And then for their toddlers, and not toddlers, but when they start to go to preschool, there's Positive Discipline for preschoolers. The Positive Discipline book, the original book, is still a lot of people's favorites because it covers all ages. And so that's the one I still recommend for school-age children. But then there's Positive Discipline for teenagers, and if you're a single parent, there's Positive Discipline for single parents. Positive Discipline in the Classroom. Now, that's an interesting story about that book, because that, and I've written a lot of the books with co-authors. Positive Discipline, the first one I wrote by myself, but then with Lynn Lott, we wrote Positive Discipline for Teenagers because I was having trouble with a couple of my own teenagers. And so one of the best ways for me to learn is to write and to try I don't like to put anything in a book that doesn't work and it hasn't worked for me or for other people. So I kept trying these methods. It took 2 years and before I felt very comfortable to publish Positive Discipline for Teenagers. But then we decided to do Positive Discipline in the Classroom because we were working with a lot of teachers on class meetings, and so we sat down and wrote Positive Discipline in the Classroom, and then later Positive Discipline, a Teacher's A to Z Guide. A lot of people like Positive Discipline A to Z the best because they can look up any subject and get several answers of what to do right now and then how to prevent the problem in the future. However, I always suggest that they get another one of the basic books along with that one because it's more of a reference book. Okay, right now what do I do when my children are fighting or hitting or biting, won't clean up their rooms, just about anything you can think of. But for them to get the full picture, it's really good for them to read one of the other books too. I must say, though, that the Positive Timeout and 50 Ways to Avoid Power Struggles is a small book. A lot of people like that one because it's short, and it includes all the tools that I give. It's more of a, okay, we want to use this tool, this tool, this tool, this tool. So that's another one that's very popular. I have to tell you, it was the only book that I've written out of anger, and because I found out that they were using this timeout booth that looked like a telephone booth that they were having kids sit in. And they would sit there like for 5 minutes if they were in the first grade, 10 minutes if they were in the second. Sometimes the window so high that the kids couldn't even see out of it. And I have to say what really made me angry was that somebody quoted me as advocating timeout. And without even seeing at all the point of positive timeout. So I sat down and wrote a whole book on it. At that time it was called Timeout Abuses and Effective Uses, which is now Positive Timeout and 50 Other Ways to Avoid Power Struggles in Homes and Classrooms. But the whole idea, it is such a paradigm shift. And when I'm doing lectures, I'll often ask somebody, I usually like to pick on a dad, and I'll say, okay, how would you feel if you came home from work and you hadn't picked up your socks that morning and your wife met you at the door and said, all right, you go to timeout and you just think about what you did. And I'll let you know when it's okay for you to come out. Of course, they always laugh because they know that that's a ridiculous idea. And yet so often we do that with kids. We say, you go to timeout and you think about what you did, which is another ridiculous statement. It's assuming we can control what kids are going to be thinking about, because I can tell you they're not thinking about what they did. What they're usually thinking about is what you did and how they can avoid getting caught next time, or how they can find excuses or get even. At the very worst, they might be thinking, gee, I really am a bad person. They might even be thinking about, what can I do to be better? And sometimes kids who want to be good, because they think that the only way I can be loved is if I'm good, it's a very dangerous belief for children to start developing. But so the whole idea of positive timeout is knowing that when we get upset, we go into that primitive brain. I often tell parents that when you're upset, you go into your reptilian brain, and reptiles eat their young. And so kids, everybody's in that fight or flight where everybody's talking and yelling and nobody can hear each other. And so the whole idea is that you need to wait for a calming down time, no conflict time, waiting till you calm down and access the rational brain again. So it's sort of based on one of the quotes that people like a lot from Positive Discipline is, where did we ever get the crazy idea that in order to make children do better, first we have to make them feel worse? It's really crazy. I mean, if you think about the last time somebody made you feel bad, that's not when you're feeling, oh, thank you, I really appreciate this, I can hardly wait to come to you for all my problems because you're so encouraging and helpful. What we know is that children and human beings do better when they feel better. And this isn't permissiveness. This isn't, oh, sweetie, here, I'll make you feel better, because that's another mistake parents make, is rescuing two children. It's just knowing that when you're in a better place, when you've calmed down, when you feel better, then you can follow up and focus on solutions that are respectful to both, where you can talk it out. Positive discipline in the classroom. Now, that's an interesting story about that book, because teachers who get it, who get that paradigm shift, find out that they don't have to be the policeman, judge, jury, and executioner, because they really do train the kids to solve their own problems. They sit down in class meetings and they learn how to find solutions to problems, which is teaching them so many valuable social and life skills. They're learning to listen to other people, to respect differences, and to focus on solutions and the guidelines for the solutions, that they have to be helpful, not hurtful, and that they need to be practical and respectful, but that they really do focus on solving the problem. They don't focus on punishment, which makes kids pay for their mistake. It focuses on solutions that help them learn from their mistake. And the nice thing about that book is it gained a lot more popularity than the publishers thought it would, because it has become one of the 8 discipline methods that is discussed in a textbook called Building Classroom Discipline by C.M. Charles. And so students in the colleges, it's used in over 300 colleges, and so they're learning that as one of 8 models. But principals have said that their principal referrals are diminished by 80% when they use positive discipline in the classroom, because they don't send kids to the principal. They say, well, gee, let's put this problem on the class meeting agenda, and then we can all work together to solve the problem so we don't have to pass the buck. You first teach kids the skills. You teach them the skills of listening and brainstorming and problem solving and understanding that the 4 goals of mistaken behavior, which are undue attention, misguided power, revenge, or assumed inadequacy. So you teach them the skills, and we teach them role-playing so that they can really get into the shoes of another person. And after they have learned those skills, then when a child has a problem, we like to give them a choice. So it's not just about class meetings. There are many other tools, and one of them is we have a wheel of choice that kids make that has several solutions for typical problems. We also have what we call positive timeout, which is not punitive at all. The kids help design an area that is designed to help them cool down until they feel better, so they don't have to sit and suffer, but they do something like read a book or listen to soft music. One first grade classroom, they designed a place that looked like space, that had stars and planets and then black netting hanging in a corner, and the kids would go there, and they could even take a buddy with them to listen. But the idea is that when they feel better and they get into their back into their rational brain, then they can work on solutions. So when a child has a problem, we might say, what would help you the most right now? Would it help you to put this problem on the agenda? Would it help you to take some positive time out? Or would you like to look at the wheel of choice and see if you can find a solution there? And you'll notice the language even is, what would help you the most right now? So it's a very different shift from, okay, you can't get away with that, I'll show you, I'm going to punish you, you go stand on the wall, you go to detention, you sit in the corner, you write sentences. It's very positive and very helpful, but it isn't permissive. It is following up with some solutions. Another thing that's, but let me just finish with the class meeting. If it does go on the agenda, then it's a good idea if it sits there for at least a day or two. For kindergarten, it might be just a few hours, but because that gives everybody a time to cool off before they work on the problem. And then what they do is they pass an item around the circle so that, and they do sit in a circle so everybody sees each other. Then they pass an item and they really brainstorm for solutions. If people are having a hard time understanding the problem, they might role play it so everybody gets more insight. But they write down all the solutions, or if any of them are punitive, they say, well, now let's look at this list and see which ones we need to eliminate, because they're more hurtful than helpful, and they're more punitive than solution oriented. So then the child who has the problem gets to pick the solution that he or she thinks will be most helpful to her or him. So it's just very positive. And Sometimes, though, another tool that's used in positive discipline in the classroom or with parents is when a child is having a problem. Instead of telling, you know, so many adults tell kids what happened, what caused it to happen, how they should feel about it, what they should do about it, they use the Socratic method, really, where you ask questions that draw forth from the child. Education comes from the root word educare, which means to draw forth. And too often we're lecturing and trying to stuff in. So an adult might sit down during a calm time, not at the time of conflict when everybody's upset, but during a calm time they might sit and say, well, you know, what happened, or what were you trying to accomplish, and how do you feel about the results, and what kinds of things did you learn from this that you could use maybe in the future, or if you wanted a different result, what would you need to do? All very friendly, all very inviting, all designed to help the child learn from their mistake, not to pay for their mistake.
All right, let's talk about some of the topics of positive discipline. One of the popular topics is spanking. Is it appropriate, and when should you do it? What are your feelings on the topic of spanking?
Of course, I'm very much against spanking. It's very interesting to me that some people thought that positive discipline meant finding a positive way to use punishment, and I'm against punishment of any form, and spanking is just one of those forms that I'm against. And I think that one of the main reasons that parents spank is they don't know what else to do. And what positive discipline is all about is just giving people lots of other alternatives. If I ask parents, you know, if you could find some other methods that would help your children learn life skills and self-discipline and problem-solving skills that without spanking, wouldn't you rather do that? And they say, of course.
Yeah, of course they would.
So I think that most people, it's just because they don't know what else to do. So they're afraid that they'll be letting their children get away with something if they don't spank them.
So what else do you do then? What are the other options?
How much time do we have?
Oh, we got all the time we want.
Well, one of the things that's interesting is that in all of the positive discipline books, we just give tons of other things to do. And people love positive discipline A to Z because they can look at just about any subject that they can having challenges with. For example, bedwetting, or, well, that's not really so much a behavior problem, but hitting, fighting, biting, temper tantrums, talking back, pouting. We've got several subjects, and that the way it's designed is that there's first a question from somebody, then a short little paragraph on understanding your child, yourself, and the situation. Then we give several suggestions, because what parents need to know is that there's never just one thing that works all the time. It's nice to have a lot of different things that might work, that what fits for you. So, like in this one, I'm looking right now at hitting, or in parentheses, spanking. There are 9 suggestions, and then there are some planning ahead to prevent future problem suggestions, and there's 7 of those, and then we talk about life skills your children can learn when you use those, then a little booster thought or a story that illustrates it, and then some parenting pointers, which are just our little mini lectures.
So what are some of the suggestions that they have in the book there?
Well, for hitting, the question is such a paradox. It says, I have tried everything I can think of to get my child to stop hitting her little brother. Sometimes she hits me. This really makes me angry. Punishment doesn't seem to work, no kidding. I have spanked her and made her say she is sorry, but the next day she is hitting again. This reminds me of a cartoon that I used to just think is so funny, because it shows this adult spanking a child saying, I'll teach you not to hit someone else. So we all know that the best example, example is the best teacher. And so it's really silly to think that we can teach a child not to do something by doing it to them. And that's what's in the paragraph on understanding your child, yourself, and the situation. How are we ever going to teach our children it is not okay to hurt others when we keep hurting them? Okay, so then the suggestions is one of the foundations of positive discipline is to be both kind and firm at the same time. Before I get to this first suggestion, I just want to set this foundation. because so many people think, well, if you're not going to punish, does that mean you're going to be permissive? And permissiveness is not healthy for children either. Children who are raised permissively grow up thinking love means getting other people to take care of me, to rescue me, to do things for me. So kind is very respectful to the child, but firm is also being respectful to the situation. And so you can be both kind and firm at the same time. And I think this is a good example. The very first suggestion is take the child by the hand and say, it is not okay to hit people. I'm sorry you are feeling hurt and upset. You can talk about it or you can hit this pillow, but people aren't for hitting. So it's taking them by hand, showing them what, telling them what they can't do, but even more important is showing them what they can do. And let me just give another one. This one people sometimes wonder about. With children under age 4, try giving them a hug before removing them from the situation. This models a loving method while showing them that hitting is not okay. Hugging does not reinforce the misbehavior. Now, this one, I think, does take some explanation, because so often people are afraid, well, if a child hits and then you give them a hug, isn't that reinforcing their misbehavior? And what most people don't understand is that positive discipline is based on the Adlerian model after Alfred Adler, the psychiatrist who was a colleague of Freud and Jung. But it's very different than behaviorism and reinforcement. It's like it's based on the philosophy that children do better when they feel better. So sometimes giving them a hug, first of all, it's modeling being kind instead of hurtful. So you're showing them being kind, and then you're also removing them from the situation. And this is a tool that we sometimes call decide what you're going to do instead of what you're going to make the child do. In a way, you're helping them get away from the situation at the same time. But I like to give another example for hitting. And my little granddaughter, Sage, when she was about 18 months old, and I had the opportunity to take care of her while her parents were in Spain. And she was at that stage where she would hit me, she would hit the dog. And instead of saying, don't hit, I would say, hit nicely. And I want to point out that it is so much more effective to tell children what they should do rather than what they shouldn't do. So I would say, touch nicely, and I would grab her little hand, and I would model for her touching my face nicely. She would go to hit the dog, and I would grab her hand kindly, not mean, and I would say, touch nicely, and I would show her how to touch the dog nicely. And then pretty soon, she would go to hit, and she'd look at me, and I'd say, touch nicely, and she would grin, and so she would touch nicely. I just think that people don't understand how much more effective this is than spanking and teaching the opposite of what you're trying to teach them.
Well, you know, a lot of people say, well, I was spanked, and I turned out okay, and you can walk down the street, and you see the teenagers on the street and stuff, and you can think, boy, those kids should have been spanked a lot more. Maybe they'd have a little more discipline in their life.
I want to point out that on www.positivediscipline.com, I have an article called I Was Spanked and I Turned Out Okay. And I really encourage people to go there and under articles and find that article, because it points out that, yes, a lot of us did turn out okay, but we could have actually turned out even better and had less fears, less feelings of inadequacy, less concern that we're loved only conditionally if we're good. And because I talk in there about how much better a person would feel if they were taught problem-solving skills and thinking skills and focusing on solutions instead of being just spanked. And I think that that's what we want. We want to teach our kids problem-solving skills and thinking skills. So read that article and you'll get a much better idea of what I'm talking about there.
Okay, well, what about a reward system where you could say, okay, if you be good for a certain amount of time, then we'll go get a treat. And if you're not, then you don't get that treat. You lose those privileges.
Oh, I just blow people's minds sometimes when I say, not only do I not believe in spanking and punishment, but also do not believe in rewards. Oh dear, what are we going to do?
Yeah, what are we going to do?
Well, see, what most parents don't think about is the long-range results of what they do. And they also don't think about the fact that children are always making decisions about themselves. They're making decisions about, am I good, am I bad? Am I capable? Am I not capable? And they're making decisions about the world. Is it safe? Is it unfriendly? And then they decide what they're going to do based on that. Okay, now you may wonder what that has to do with the question. When we give rewards, it teaches children an external locus of control. In other words, what that means, okay, I will do this good thing only if I'm going to get the reward, which also means, if the reward isn't there, why should I do it? And what we want to do is teach children an inner locus of control, and we want to teach them that they do good things because it feels good, because it contributes, because it helps them to feel more capable. And I think that I just have to tell you this story. It was so funny. We were doing one of our workshops. We do two-day workshops on teaching parenting the positive discipline way, and they're very experiential. And we think it's very important to do experiential because you learn so much more when you're doing the role plays and the activities. And one of the role plays was about giving rewards. And it was interesting because we had a person in the workshop who had a PhD in psychology, and she had studied behavior modification and really believed in rewards. And it was just, she was struggling when we kept saying no rewards. But it just so happened, it was just amazing that she was the one who volunteered to be the child who was receiving the rewards. Okay, if you make your bed, then you'll get the dollar, and or you'll get the M&Ms. And right in the middle of the role play, she just threw up her hands and said, okay, I get it. Because what she says, I'm thinking and deciding as this child, is that I'll do it only if I get the reward. And how can I get a bigger reward? So it's teaching them more manipulation and how to do something just for the reward than rather than for doing it to be a contributing member of our society. So,
but isn't that the way our society is? I mean, if you go to work and you do your good job and then you get paid, if you show up late, then you get fired. I mean, that's how our society is, isn't it?
I am so glad you asked that question. Because it is true that there are consequences. And I could go so many directions on this one, but let me just say this. What we don't allow often enough, we don't allow our children to experience consequences. Instead, we try to impose consequences on them. So, for an example, if a child loses his baseball mitt, it would be nice if parents could just say, oh, honey, I bet that really feels bad. And then let them experience the consequences of losing it. But instead, what parents do is what I call ball them out and then bail them out. They lecture them about how could you be so careless? I've told you a million times if you'd put it away and take care of us. And by golly, I'm not going to buy you another one. And then pretty soon they're saying, okay. They're driving them to the store saying, I'll buy you a new one this time. But this time you better take care of it. And I mean it. And the kid knows they don't have to take care of it. All they have to do is put up with the lecture, and they don't ever have to experience the consequences. So it's a big difference between experiencing consequences and imposing them. But the other thing is about the job. Sure, if I'm late, I'm probably going to experience the consequences of being fired. And if I go to work, I get a paycheck. But again, show me one person who the only reason they go to work is to get a paycheck, and I'll show you someone who's very miserable. It's like there are so many other benefits of feeling fulfilled, feeling capable, feeling like you're contributing that is the true reward. The other thing is, if you speed, you're going to get a ticket. If you break the law, you're going to go to jail. What I really believe is that when you use positive discipline that teaches kids skills, thinking skills, helps them be more aware of the consequences of their choices, they're much more likely to be more self-disciplined and think about those consequences instead of that somebody's going to come and rescue them. I just thought of a story that I really want to tell that goes back to this whole spanking thing.
Okay.
And if we are remembering that children are always making decisions. Cheryl Irwin, who is the co-author of several of the Positive Discipline books, Positive Discipline for Preschoolers, Positive Discipline for the First 3 Years, Positive Discipline for Single Parents, several of them. Anyway, she was telling the story about she had heard spare the rod, spoil the child. So she had learned, boy, you're supposed to spank your child. So when her little son was only about 4 years old, she spanked him for something, and she felt terrible about doing it, but she thought this is what she was supposed to do. And sent him to his room, and then about 5 minutes, she just peeked in to see how he was doing, and he was sitting there hitting himself, saying, I'm a bad boy, I'm a bad boy, and her heart just broke. She said, this is not what I want my teach my child, to think that he's a bad boy. And so I think that sometimes parents are misled when they say, but it works, I spanked him and the behavior stopped. Yes, I'm never saying that punishment doesn't work. It works if all you're interested in is stopping the behavior. But sometimes we have to beware of what works and think about the long-range effects of what is that child deciding about himself, what is he deciding he's going to do in the future. And I think that sometimes even children decide, I better be good, because so I'll be loved. So what is the foundation? Conditional love. So they're always thinking, I'm going to have to be a pleaser in order to be loved. So I think it's very important that we think about the long-range effects.
Now, in our last episode, we talked a little bit about the timeout, the positive timeout book, and how that book came to be. What about timeout? Is that an effective way to enforce positive discipline or to implement positive discipline?
Yes, but it includes a paradigm shift. It's a very, very different thing that timeout that's punitive. Like, let me just ask
you. What do you mean punitive?
That it makes a child feel bad. Punishment is designed to make kids pay. It's designed to make them feel bad, actually. It's like based on this idea, and one of the quotes that people really like from my book is, where did we ever get the crazy idea that in order to make children do better, first we have to make them feel worse? So let me just give you an example.
Okay.
If you did something that Cindy didn't like, Cindy is Ken's wife, and maybe you left your socks on the floor, and you came home, and she said, I am so upset that you left your socks on the floor. You just go sit in your room, and you think about what you did, and I'll tell you when you can come out. How would that go over with you?
That'd be great. I'd head for the room, turn the TV on, flip the computer on, and I'd be set.
Good point. You know, one father said, it doesn't do any good to send my child to his room. He enjoys it.
Yeah.
But see, the way timeout usually is used is you go to your room and you think about what you did and you suffer. And the first thing is that some children don't suffer. Some of them will just enjoy themselves. Others will get even. But the idea that we can control what a child is going to think about is just silly. What they're really going to be thinking about is how to not get caught next time, or how to get even, or even worse, that they are a bad person. So the way timeout is different here is that you get the children to help design a place that will help them feel better. It might have cushions. And did we talk about this last time? But
we didn't go into a whole lot of detail, just about the book pretty much. But
okay, well, so if they design a place that helps them feel better, it might have soft music and stuffed animals. And then you teach them that when they're feeling bad, they're in that primitive brain where the only option is fight or flight, and sometimes they just need to go to some place where they can feel better and get back to their rational brain, and then we can get back together and work out solutions. So after the child has helped design it, then I think it's also important that they choose it, not that you send them there, but to say, would it help you to go to your feel-good spot right now? And by the way, I do think it's a good idea to name it something different than timeout. And then the child might say yes, or they might be so upset, they'll say no. And then you say, would you like me to go with you? And now think about that. Why not go with them? It's not designed to punish. It's designed to help them feel better. And besides that, you probably need it just as much as they do. And if they still say no, then you might say, okay, I think I'll go. And then you just turn around and go to your timeout spot, because think of the lovely model this is giving to the child, that it's okay to just go to someplace that'll help you feel better. Now, sometimes that's enough. The child calms down, they quit misbehaving, and you don't need to do anything. But sometimes it requires follow-up. But follow-up is done so much, it's so much more effective if it's during a no-conflict time when you're not in that primitive brain, when you wait till you're both feeling better, and then you can discuss with the child what happened. You know, what do you think caused that to happen? What do you feel? How do you feel about it? What ideas do you have to solve the problem? So then you can follow up in a child with, in a way, asking these curiosity questions that help them think about the consequences of their choices, take responsibility for them in a non-threatening environment, and then decide what they could do in the future.
Okay, you have four criteria for effective discipline. What are those four things?
Well, for discipline to be effective, it first has to be what I talked about earlier, kind and firm at the same time.
So is that number one then?
That's number one.
Okay.
Number two is that it helps children feel a sense of belonging and significance or connection. And punishment does not help children feel connection. It does not help them feel belonging and significance. Third, it's effective long-term. And we've talked about all these in a different way, but when you just put them out in the one, two, three, four. And number four is that effective discipline helps children learn valuable life skills, problem-solving skills, thinking skills, contribution skills, and punishment doesn't do that either. So in order for effective discipline to be effective, it needs to meet all of those criteria, and we have hundreds of methods that do that. Discipline that helps children feel that belonging and significance, it's kind and firm, it works long-term, and they learn life skills.
Okay, does it help to understand at all why children misbehave in the first place? What's their motivation for that?
Well, I think that that's one of the reasons why the first or the second one is that it helps children feel a sense of belonging and significance, because the biggest reason children misbehave is that they don't think they belong or that they're significant. Now, some people parents have a hard time making that connection, but if a child is feeling, I'm inadequate, you like my brother more than me, or in any way they're just feeling they don't belong, they will usually choose what Alfred Adler called one of four mistaken ways to find belonging and significance. They'll either try and get undue attention, I belong only if you pay attention to me, or they will seek undue or misguided power, which is I belong only if I'm the boss, or at least if I don't let you boss me. Or they choose to get revenge. They hurt. It hurts to not belong. And so they'll try to get even. Or the most discouraging of all is when the child feels I don't belong and so I give up. And that's what we call assumed inadequacy. And I think that this is one of the reasons why it's so effective. If you help children feel belonging and significance, then they don't have the need to misbehave.
Is that what you mean by try to understand the belief behind the behavior?
Exactly. And one of my favorite stories that illustrates that is a parent who really understood dealing with the belief behind the behavior, because she had a four-year-old who was feeling very dethroned by the birth of a new baby. So if you can just imagine you're a four-year-old and mom comes home with a brand new baby, and what do you see happening? Mom spending a lot of time with the baby. What do you believe that means? Mommy doesn't love me anymore. Is that true? No. But what matters is what the child believes is true, not what is true. So if you are a child who believes mommy doesn't love you as much as the baby, what are you going to do to get the love back? You're probably going to whine and cry and want a bottle, and works for the baby. Why not for you? So what this mother did was she waited till the baby was asleep. And then she got four candles out of the junk drawer. She got two that represented the mom and the dad, and two smaller ones for the four-year-old and the baby. And she said, honey, I want to tell you a story about our family. And they sat down at the kitchen table, and she had the candles and the candle holders and her lighter, and she lit the first candle and said, this is the mommy candle, and this flame represents my love. And then she picked up another candle and said, this is the daddy candle. And she lit that candle with her flame and said, And when I married your daddy, I gave him all my love, and I still have all my love left. And then she picked up a smaller candle and said, this one is for you, and when you were born, I gave you all my love. And daddy still has all my love, and I still have all my love left. And then she picked up the littlest candle of all and said, this one is for the baby, and when the baby was born, I gave the baby all my love. And you still have all my love. And daddy still has all my love. And I still have all my love left, because that's the way love is. And now look at the bright light we have in our family with all this love. And it's just such a graphic way of helping, dealing with the belief behind the children, the behavior, helping the child know that you still belong, I still love you.
Okay, well, a lot of this information that we talked about today, we came from the book Positive Discipline A to Z. If someone wanted to find that book, where would they find it?
At positivedisciplined.com. Of course, it's in a lot of it's in bookstores or sometimes at your library, but if you want your own copy so you can underline and refer to it, one of the other things that I have to tell you I really like about this book is that parents, as soon as a child is old enough to read or to understand, you can read the suggestions with the child and say, which one of these do you think would work best for us? So it's a way of getting everyone involved.
So you make it kind of a reference book that you
It's a great reference book.
All right, well, that's about all the time we have today. Thank you, Jane.
Thank you, son.
All right, so until next time, this is Ken Ainge for Focusing on Solutions from PositiveDiscipline.com.